Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah. I get exotic with the melodic tune. I get hypnotic with the moon, but you got to put me down soon. I flip a shot show if you come my way. Up, down, and around, even sideways. I'm about as ready as the light can get. We can go all out. I ain't afraid of the sweat, but yet. I bet you got the techniques to freak a girl inside out. What's that all about? Can I have some of that? You gotta put me on. Word around town is your 9 men strong. I wanna be put on in the worst way. Since the first day, I think it was a Thursday. You be that brother that I wanna see.
You are listening to the 30 Plus WTF Show. Where the hell
you been? I like the way you be with all that personality. But I got flavor too. You need to get with me.
Hey, good evening. This is Malika and Brittany, and we are the 30 Plus WTF Show, where we talk about what is necessary. Hey, Brittany.
Hey, lady. How you doing?
Amazing. And you, how you doing this evening?
I cannot complain. I am having a wonderful Monday.
Oh, what is going on? You sound really happy. What's happening?
Nothing much. Just Monday. I just had a wonderful dinner. I just ate.
Okay.
It's a good day. I'm not hungry. That's all.
Okay.
I like
you
food.
Sounded like, woo, excited.
Right.
Yeah, food will do that to you.
It does. It does that to me all the time. So. You know.
Let's get our resident community activist on, who always brings the fire and the wisdom, Mr. Lonnie Wilson. Hey, Lonnie.
Hello, ladies. How are y'all tonight? It's good to be here.
We are,
you know,
great.
We are good.
Right. That is good. I wanted to ask you something. You know, I heard Brittany said she's glowing. It isn't from the weekend that you're still glowing. It's not an afterglow, is it?
Oh.
Oh, wait, what did you say?
I said it isn't from the weekend that you're still glowing and you have some kind of app working on you. Is that what's going on?
Well.
I'll shut up.
Well,
I'll shut up, Britt. I'll shut up.
No, wait. What? I'm like, wait, what was supposed to happen this past weekend?
Well, I don't know. You know, I just was, you know, it's just, I'm being inquisitive. I'm nosy.
Hey, Lonnie. Hey.
Yes.
Hey, Lonnie. I always have a glow. So
ooh.
Whether
ooh.
It's an afterglow
ooh.
Or not is, you know, whatever.
It's in question, but you're glowing at all times, right?
Hey, I glow all the time. What
I'm not mad
you
at
saying?
You, sister. I think you
glow
funny. Too. Right. You know, you glow all the time. Your smile alone is, you know, it's electric. I agree.
Oh, you better. Stop it. It's so true. Keep saying it. But it's...
Right.
I know. She came on air
just excited.
Didn't she? It
like,
just sounded
oh,
like, you know, she's at the carnival or something. Right.
You know what? We're supposed to enjoy life. And that's what I'm doing.
Yeah.
I'm like,
most definitely.
It's summertime still. I'm trying to have a great time. That's where I am with it. Why not?
I agree.
Why
that's
not?
That's a great attitude. Right.
Exactly. Why not, girl? So what's on Brittany's mind before we bring our guests on this evening?
Okay.
This is always the dangerous point of the show.
Yes. Yes.
That was so funny.
It is.
So I was just coming in the house. I had to run and turn the alarm off so y'all didn't hear that part of it.
Right.
So my question today, this is what I've been thinking about for a while, and it's been about, I know you're not supposed to be preoccupied with the future. I know that. But I can't help but to think about it. So here's my question today. You, and this is for our listeners too, you are 85 years old. And, of course, I answer this question first because y'all make me do that. But you are 85 years old. What are the three things that you need? And here are my three things. I need, whether it be the person I'm in a relationship with or one of my girls, I need at least one ride or die. And by ride or die, I mean if I pick up the phone at 3 o'clock in the morning, and God forbid this ever has to happen, but if this actually happens, if I have to pick up the phone at 3 a.m. and call you and say, come outside in 15 minutes with a shovel and don't ask no questions.
Right.
I just need that person. So I need at least, whether it be my significant other or a friend, I need one ride or die. I need an income that makes me comfortable. I don't have to be a multi-billionaire. That would be very nice. But I need that income that I don't have to work for and that's coming in. And I need that place, my retreat, my place, wherever that is, probably summertime because at 85 I don't want to be around no snow. So those are the three things I need. So you two, tell me, what do you all need for your future self?
I'm going to open my mouth first. Okay. Number one, I think the first thing that I would need is I want to be at peace with the condition of my people worldwide, and also would hope that the culture repairs itself for number two, so that the elders are revered like they once were, so that when I'm an elder, and I mean, I'm getting to be an elder now, but when I'm really an elder and I can't move around, that the culture encompasses me like it once did. You know, when old people used to be old in the African-American community, the whole entire community came around them. You know, the family came around. We didn't put our old people in old folks' homes or any of that. And it was just something really strong about the culture. So if I was 85 today, I wish those two things would happen.
Okay. Woo. Brittany, Lord, you always come with these questions,
right.
Lord.
I just, Lonnie, I love your answer. I just like to, this is why I think, Malika, we've decided on what's on Brittany's mind, because this is the stuff I think about by myself in my room.
And I think you need to keep, you need to continue to keep thinking. Just keep thinking.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
I love right,
Malika,
Malika. I know, and I love how selfless. I love how selfless Lonnie is, because I was really thinking about me and myself and I, and about what I needed right then. Of course,
you know what's hey, you know what's crazy though, Brittany. You know what's crazy? There is no I. You know, we're all so interconnected.
No.
There is no I. My health is your health, and your health is mine, and it's really that serious.
You know what? Mm-hmm. And the thing is, I do know that, and I feel like we all are connected. But what happens is, I get I live by myself, and then so I spend a lot of time alone with my mind, and so I start thinking about what do I need, what needs to happen for me, and then when you get to this place, when this is what happens to me, then I start thinking about me. But then, you know, I go outside.
You know,
I
talk a lot.
You know
so
what I mean.
I'm going to throw one more thing at you. A long time ago, an old lady said to me, she said, we're all hurling around on a big giant-sized mud ball through space, and there's no way that we can exist unless we all figure out that we all need each other. And I never forgot that. It was a combined studies teacher in high school who said that to me, and I never forgot it. Because it really is that. So even when you're at home by yourself, when you're at home by yourself, just the energy from other people is there with you. All the people who have been, your elders, all the people who have been in your life, your family, everybody's right in that room with you.
And sometimes I do lose sight of that and think about my singular me. And it's really, and when you say that, it's really not about me. But I just probably need to get back to that. But like I said, come on, Malika,
Yeah, come on, Malika, with your stalling self.
Lord, I always think about leaving. I haven't thought about who I will be or what's going to be happening when I'm 85. So I'm trying to put myself in that space right now when you ask that question. And I would like to know when I'm 85 and my nephews and nieces are around me, my sister is there, I would like to know that I'm leaving a legacy behind that they can share with the next generation. Like, Aunt Malika did this. Great Aunt Malika did this for the community. She did this for our family. You know, I would love for to leave that legacy behind for generations and generations. And definitely I want to know that family is there. I was there for my grandmother, and I saw how important it was for her in her final days to have family around her. You know, that it was just beautiful to me. And I hope to have that. You know, I hope to not be alone in those final days. But she had loved ones around her. That's major important to me. And of course, financial wealth, security. That would be, you know, wealth would be beautiful, you know, knowing that not only a legacy that I'm leaving behind, but also some generational wealth to my family and to my community as well. So, yeah, those are the three things I would love to sit back, you know, in my lazy boy recliner, and I'm 85, and knowing that if I left today, I know that I made a mark. I did for my family, and generations will know that, you know, I was blood, sweat, and tears for them, and they didn't even know
the whole
me.
Time.
So, yeah. That's what I would like.
I love it. Look at that. Look at y'all.
we got kind of heavy today.
Yeah, I know.
Leave it to Brittany. Leave it to Brittany to ask the question, and then Lonnie really takes it home. You're like, Lonnie done got real deep on us.
Yeah. You got real deep. I was like basic necessities, and you getting deep all in it, and then make me feel bad about, you know.
No, don't ever feel bad. Don't feel bad.
No, I'm
messing. I know that anyway, but I'm just.
But, you know, I'm like, I think these things run through your mind, and especially this is the first time I've lived alone for a long period of time. I've either had a roommate or I've lived with family. And so for this, I've been by myself now for like a year. It's going on a year being like really just by myself, and it's like, man, the stuff that runs through my mind, like, I don't even tell y'all the crazy stuff. I ask y'all the, you know, like
the easy stuff.
The delving questions, you know, the PC kind of stuff. But, I mean, one, I don't know, maybe this time from what's on Brittany's mind, I might get into the crazy that's in Brittany's mind.
Let it loose, dial, let it loose.
I might let into the crazy that is in.
No. The crazy side of people is the interesting side of people. Let it out.
Like, I don't know if y'all and our listeners are ready for a crazy Brit that's, like, running around in there. And so these are literally questions I ask myself. And when I ask you, I'm like, okay, what do I need? And it's like, it, for me, it might be 50 things. And believe me that my answers have all of your stuff in it, but then I'm limited to three. Like, I'll ask you on air to save time. I'll be like three or like five. But, you know, in my head, it might be 15 things I need at 50, at 85. Hmm. So I'm just saying, for you all listening out there, this is stuff I ask myself all the time. I'm a little, you know. This is what I do with myself. Especially because, again, this is my last week, like, all the way off. I start work on Monday. So I have, you know, had a wonderful summer of reflection and leisure. So that's where I am. And,
all right.
Yeah, that's, you know, that's Brit today. Here we go.
All right. Here we go. All right, Brittany, we got I want you to ask that question to our guest tonight. I would love to hear his answer on that. I think I'm going to ask a few people that question tomorrow that I run into. What are three things that you want at the age of 85 or that you want to see happen? I'm going to ask that question. Let's get our guest on tonight. I would love to hear his response to that. So much information and concepts over community and our money being invested into our community were discussed last week, and we ran out of time. I mean, the discussion was pretty heavy, and I was learning a lot from it. You know, I was like, okay, we got to bring Mr. Bobby Burns back on for a part two. And as a campaign strategist, Mr. Burns runs Powering Campaigns. You all need to look that up. He promotes political candidates, products, nonprofits, you name it. He is out there just promoting concepts and things that are good for the community, and he's an expert at it. And just listening to him talk about it, I mean, I was sitting here just taking notes last week. It was so powerful. But he's back with us tonight, and, you know, we're happy to get his time tonight because every time I see him, he's on the run, and he's got a lot going on. I know him and Lonnie have teamed up, and they've got a powerful event coming up this month here in Evanston. So he's a man that's out there that's making things happen. And, you know, everyone that we have on this show are powerful leaders in their community and their movers and their shakers. And Bobby Burns is definitely one of those people. So welcome back to the 30 Plus WTF show, Mr. Burns. Hey, Bobby.
Hello, hello, Malika, Brittany, Lonnie. How y'all doing?
What
good.
Up, there, Bobby?
How y'all doing?
I'm back.
All right.
It feels good.
You sound like James Brown. I'm back.
Right.
I'm back.
Let's have some more fun, y'all.
Yes. I love it. We couldn't get a word in. This show,
y'all talking this time. Now, me and Lonnie going to be quiet.
No, you're not. Oh, really? I appreciate a point.
Look, me and Malika appreciate a point of view because literally, ask Malika, we've had guests that have come up with topics and then didn't have nothing to say. Don't do that.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Right. No. I'll never be blamed for that.
Well, I want to be real clear. I can't ever promise silence.
Right.
Love it. This is why we love you, but literally we had a guest come up with the topic and then didn't have any input, and we were like, what's happening? Like, what are you talking about? So anyway, we appreciate you, and we love to hear your point of view, so... That's why we're here.
I appreciate that, and I appreciate the intro. You know, as she was calling me an expert, I had just took a bite of pizza, and I was wiping sauce off my face, and I was like, let me get myself together. I'm supposed to be more classy than this. She just said, I'm an expert. Let me sit up.
Hey, you can
get myself together.
On your face. You can be an expert with food on your face.
But I appreciate the opportunity to come back part two. You know, this is wonderful, and we need more of this, so I'm always open for a conversation, and, you know, I learned a lot, you know, just even listening to Lonnie and everybody's point of view. You know, this is great.
Yeah, I love to listen. I love to hear people's point of view. This is why
right.
I think I was a born question asker. I always ask questions, and it's like,
right.
I mean, you know, especially men. I've had relationships with men, like, why do you ask so many questions? And it's like, I just want to know what you think. Because I know I think about stuff all the time anyway. So reason number 10,000, I'm single. But anyway, that's beside the point. That's not the show. So,
that show would be popping too. So y'all need to bring that one back.
Hey.
What are you talking about? The Britney Gets Married show?
No, just maybe that too. Y'all trying? That's a whole nother show.
Lonnie,
Britney goes on a bunch of dates. That's a whole nother show.
Number three,
right.
Britney.
Right.
I
want to
hear about
speed dating with Britney.
I've been hit on a date. Like, stop it. So anyway, Alika challenged me to ask you the question. You're 85 years old. You're 85.
Okay.
What are the three things you need?
What are the three things I need?
Mm-hmm.
Possibly a diaper, but hopefully not.
No, that doesn't count. No.
A
diaper.
I'm going to be real.
You're controlling your bodily function.
I may not be able to control it. You know, I need a diaper.
Stop
and
me.
You know what?
Wait, I'm sorry. No, that's unacceptable. No,
I can't use that. You know, but to that point though, I really do have you know, I'm one of those people that I always want to be in control almost to a fault, and
yeah,
or maybe to a fault, and so I do worry about that. So I do hope at 85, what I would want is just a little bit of mobility, and you know, seeing my grandmother, who, you know, was able to drive a car up until like 80-something, right around that age that we're just talking about today. Hopefully I can, you know, follow in her footsteps and get in that car and not kill nobody and still be able to move around and run little errands. And, you know, because some people on the street is, you know, it's already a lethal weapon being in the car. So when you have somebody that feels like there's nobody even in the car, that is that out of control, y'all need to get them off. We got to get them off the street somehow. But hopefully I would have a little mobility. That would be wonderful. That would be a blessing. And what else would I want? I would want people to remember me as somebody that was helpful. You know, I always remind myself, you know, when I go out to different functions and just in like, if I really trying to figure out how I should present myself somewhere, I always say just be kind and helpful. And I wasn't always like that. I was like that when I was a little younger. And then when I got into those crazy teenage years, I got into just really, you know, really focusing on myself, only thinking of myself, considering only myself. And so as an adult for a while, I've really just reminded myself to be kind, to be helpful. And so I want people to remember me as that person. You know, I think the people that have, you know, at their funerals, where they got so many people that show up, you know, for them, I think those folks are always, you know, from what I remember, this always seems to be folks that really cared about people and extended themselves to help people. Somebody that you can count on, that if you called them, you know, early in the a.m. or you called them in the morning, you know, at night or whatever it was, that they were always available and they always extended themselves to help folks that helped them and that they cared about. And sometimes, you know, to help people that didn't even help them. So I would love to be remembered as that person. I think that is that's certainly the way I want to be remembered, probably more than anything else. And I haven't always felt that way, but at this point in my life, that certainly would be a blessing. And I just want to know that you know, I always joke with people that it's like, you know, I have a 3-year-old son, and I'm like, man, I could put all my little crazy theories and ideas into his head, and he can't do nothing. He just got to take it over and over and over again, and he can do some crazy stuff. It don't even have to be the right stuff. You know, it's just my stuff, and it's just like, take this. You know, you're just shoveling all your little theories and ideas and concepts into these little human beings. And so I think my last thing that I would want is I hope I'm giving my son and, you know, his children at that point the right tools to really be happy. You know, that's really what I want. I think we all want for our loved ones. It's just happiness. Like, life is very aggressive and it's very abusive at times, and it's tough. And it doesn't take long to get tough, too. You know, right after elementary school, it's like it gets very serious and very real. And so I want to give, you know, my son and his children the tools just to be happy and to try to avoid you know, dysfunction, and not to say you shouldn't help your community and things of that nature, but just, you know, Lonnie always says something I love. He always says, you know, don't minor in the major. Don't major in the minor, I'm sorry. And so, you know, it's no matter what you do, if you focus on the things that are important and not like the controversy and the gossip and all those other things surrounding it, you can actually get some things done. So I think those are my three. And a diaper. I'm still saying that diaper. Just in case.
I love your answer. I love it. Look, I mean,
that's a good question.
Mm-hmm.
Love it.
You know, I mean, mm-hmm. I think we're coming. This is why we're all here, and this is why we do this every week, to uplift and educate and entertain people. And it's like, you know, you want to leave something behind, but you want to give people tools to make themselves happy. Because I always say, after I saw this commercial, I was like, I am on the relentless pursuit of happiness. Because I'm like, that's what it's all about. And
that's
it's,
what it's all about.
Mm-hmm.
To make myself happy, but to make somebody else happy is even more important. And to just be, you know, just to spread some love around. And that's where
absolutely.
I am with all of it. Spread some love, be love, you know, give love, receive love. It's just, you know, do the love thing. And so that's where I am. And thank you so much for your answer.
Yes,
and
yes, thank you for that question.
No problem. I'm a question asker, and I have a friend that's even asked more questions than me, and I need to bring her on the show. But anyway, I love to see where people's minds are, so that's where I am with it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, we need to all hang off this show too, because I love people like that. You know, because I like to get deep.
Yeah.
I like to use this little brain. Let me see what we can come up with. You know, the crazier the questions get, the better.
Because,
you know, you've
not,
been out sometimes where the conversation stays on a certain level and it's like, it's cool, but let's dig a little deeper. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I love that. I love that.
Sure. I do too. Okay, you know, we got to make a date. Let's all make a
date. Let's do it.
I'm game for that, too. Yeah, I'm game for that. You know, but I just want to add something. You know, I want to add something. You know, it's really funny that almost everybody in this show has talked about giving to other people because, you know, I've kind of spent my life doing that, even through my own sickness and madness I still gave to my community. And one of the things that we have to do is we have to start, you know, noticing the real qualities of human beings and not their frailties. You know, it's like we pick at the scabs of people, you know, the bad things that they've done or been into. You know, we for some reason, you know, our dysfunction, one of our parts of our dysfunction is that we focus in on that, but we don't focus in on the real beauty of people's souls and the things that they've given to the world. And I think we need to redirect that. Matter of fact, I think all African American people should stop criticizing African American people in every single facet. No matter what you may think of them, you know, under this stress and under this strain, if they're surviving, moving, raising children, going to work, they are miracles. And you know, we need to appreciate that. That's really what I wanted to say.
Yeah. And on that, congratulations all black people winning gold medals in the Olympics.
Yes.
Winning medals in the Olympics. I love it.
Yes.
I just had to send that shout out.
Yes.
I love it.
USA and Jamaica have really just been on
fire.
I've been loving it. Absolutely loving it. What's her name? Simone Manuel. Am I saying her last name correctly? Simone?
Yes.
She is just, she had me in tears, absolute tears. And what's the gentleman's name? He came in second to Usain Bolt. He was a gentleman that had, they had found Adderall in his system, and he was trying to prove that, you know, he wasn't taking anything, and so he was suspended. Basically discredit everything that he did, and he came back, and I was rooting. I just saw the sadness in his eyes. I was rooting for that man so hard. I knew he wasn't going to beat Bolt, but I was like, please come in second, because I just wanted him to prove the world wrong, that he deserved those medals, that, you know, that he's a talented runner, and you could just see it in his eyes. He wanted it so bad. I was in tears for him that he came in second, because it meant more than just the medal itself. I mean, he had people to prove wrong that he, you know, did this without, you know, any drugs. you know. So
sure.
I love those redemptive moments.
Yes, I love that redemption stuff.
I'm not even gonna lie. In the movies, that's when a movie will get it one single tear out of me. If there is some heavy redemption at the end, I'm going in.
Yeah,
because I love it. That's just that.
Yeah.
Just getting through adversity, you know what I mean? Just the struggle, you know, because I've had a very close relationship with struggle in my life. And just to make it out of it, you feel exactly how they feel in that moment. Like, this just feels amazing.
Yes.
To just make it to the other side. So, yeah, I agree with you on that.
Right. Love it.
Yes, it's been pretty emotional watching the games. But Bobby,
and you know, we got somebody from Evanston too. Just to cut in there, we got somebody in Evanston who's in the Olympics as well, competing. Margaret Bengbosi. I might be pronouncing the name wrong, but she was an HHS graduate, went to Notre Dame, and she's actually competing with Nigeria. And so I haven't followed her as close as I should have, but I know
one of my kids.
That's one of your kids. Okay.
Well,
I didn't know she was family focused. Okay. But I had to
all
shout
right.
her out because that's wonderful.
Oh, wow. All right. What's her name?
I know it's Margaret, and I can't. The Bengbosi, or what's the last name, Lonnie? You remember her last name?
Your pronunciation is correct.
Okay, yeah. And she had a GoFundMe to try to get her family there, and she raised a decent amount of money to get her family there with her in Rio, which was wonderful. So, yeah, she's I feel like she's a sprinter. I want to say she's a sprinter. And,
I don't remember. Yeah.
Right, one of them. But, I mean, as soon as I knew she was from Evanston, you know, that was all I needed. So I supported her, and I hope she does well. I'm going to actually look her up, you know, after we get off to see how she's been doing down there.
We should all know her name and throwing, like, a get-together, like, watching her.
Yes.
You know.
Yes.
Yes.
Wow. Okay. We need to find out more about that and make sure she know she got family here supporting her.
Absolutely.
No matter what. So, Bobby, last week it got so intense, the discussion about community and where our money is going, where our support is going. I know that that's been a serious topic around Chicago for sure, where people should be investing their time, their energy, their money, because a lot of people feel like they're putting out so much and they don't see any progress, they don't see results, they don't see anything happening for change. And you were bringing up some really valid points last week that had me thinking, you know, in terms of it. Well, if we're all going to put our monies together, let's put our monies together for a nonprofit that's helping people with their credit score, or, you know, that's helping people with buying real estate, taking over a lot of the abandoned buildings in Chicago, the areas they're trying to push people out so eventually they can just take it over. We should be, you know, buying up that land. I mean, you were bringing up a lot of things for us to think about, and I wanted you to come back and elaborate some more on that topic, because I just feel like we're on a treadmill or running in a circle. And we feel like we're doing something, but it's not getting anywhere. So we need to get off the treadmill, get off the merry-go-round, and actually take steps that are going to change things for the next generation and the generation after that. We've been talking about leaving legacy and generational wealth.
Right.
So even though we may not see the full bloom of our efforts that we start taking right now, but we know that, you know, it's going to mean the world generations from now. So can you speak more to what you were talking about last week? Because that was pretty powerful.
Absolutely. And I do want to double back. You know, I was listening, you know, to certain segments in our last interview, and I realized that something you said, I agree with, as far as I do think that there is a ton we need to do within our own community as far as making sure we're passing down wealth and making sure we're not, you know, that we're just, that there's some, you know, there's some legacy that we're passing down, and we're investing, in, you know, not just in our community, but in our families and building with our families as well. I do think that's important. There's a ton of work we need to do. So it just felt like I came across like I was saying that wasn't an issue. That certainly is an issue. And even going further on that, you know, like we said, 95% of our dollars are spent outside of our community. And the issue is that we allow people to make us feel bad when we start talking about buying black or buying within our community. And the issue is that we don't make the people feel bad on the other end who aren't shopping with us at all. So, again, we're spending 95% of our dollars outside the community, but that's not reciprocated at all. And the folks that do not reciprocate that, they don't get any pressure at all, you know, to buy black. So I find that, you know, offensive as well, the fact that they can go throughout their whole lives purchasing and not trying to purchase outside of their own communities. And so it's like if they won't shop with us and then we won't shop with us because there's so much pressure for us not to, because every time we start these campaigns to buy black, people make us feel guilty about that. You know, it's just it's madness. You know, at some point we have to say, you know what, you know, we have to take care of our community. I think all kind of sub communities take care of one another first, before they go outside the community. And I don't think that's an unhealthy way to behave. And I don't think that's, you know, there's anything even prejudice about that. It's not saying only shop in your community, but just be mindful. Try to spend 70% in your community or 60%, 50%, something. And the issue is, you know, I was having a conversation with a gentleman today. The reason why I bring that up is because there's a lot of folks outside of our community who ask, who don't really believe that we can unify, that we can come together and make it happen and put our dollars together, because they're looking at the fact that we're spending all out our money outside our community. A lot of times when different issues come up and we need city council presence, nobody shows up. When there's important votes, like there was one in Evanston, Illinois, obviously where most of us are from, I think all of us are from, it was a referendum to get a new school in the Fifth Ward, historic African-American community. It went out for a referendum, you know, the community didn't show up, you know, as much as we should have to vote, as far as, you know, our community, the black community. It's probably one of the reasons why we didn't get it done. So at too many points, there's times where they feel they're basically calling our bluff. They're saying, hey, if there's a need, if you guys can do it differently, if there's an alternative, do it. You know, and I really feel that more than I ever have, that there's like this challenge to our community saying, hey, you know, can y'all do it? You know, if y'all don't want us to, don't tell us how to use our money. We're going to continue to spend our money with these nonprofits that aren't working. We're going to continue to invest in the organizations that y'all do have, maybe NAACP, that have already, to a certain extent, you know, just their initial vision has changed. They're less, you know, they're less, I think, beneficial to our community as they once were, because they're not supported as much by us. So it's like they're calling, they're saying, hey, if y'all can, you know, put it together and put something better together, do it. And so that's what I like to speak on today, just in the beginning. How do we get past that? Like, how do we come together as well, so that, you know, we can put our money together and start to build some of these institutions up and some of these programs ourselves. I really want to, because I don't know that answer. I'm really, you know, I'm really just kind of seeking some guidance in that myself. You know, what do we need to do? How do we come together and get past? Because I've literally, and this will be my last thing, I've heard people, I've come to people for money for different things, and they'll literally tell me, and these black folks now, they'll tell me, oh, we don't have enough white people involved in this. We got to get some more white people involved for this to be successful. Like, that's something that people, pillars in our community, African-American community in Evanston, have told me to my face, you know. And so, and that's an issue. That's a huge issue. And so I'm like, you know, again, we can discuss how these other institutions, organizations who are outside our community interact with us. There's a lot that needs to be done there. We can continue that discussion. But I also want to know, how do we get past that mentality, though? Somebody telling the young man.
I really want to jump in right here.
Absolutely.
You know, this is.
Come on, Lonnie.
I'm coming.
Bring it.
You know, first of all, this hierarchy of worth that black people have had to face for, you know, 300, some 500 years, whatever. You know, we're put in this situation where our own worth is questioned. So when black people try to think in a unified way, it's as if we're rebelling against something that has been good for us. Every culture, the Jewish culture, the Oriental culture, the Indian culture, the Pakistani culture, they all work for themselves. If you look at Devon Avenue, in Chicago. When I'm a kid, Devon Avenue was 100% Jewish. When the Middle Eastern people came over, they took over every single store on Devon. From McCormick all the way to Ridge, it is owned and operated by the Pakistani or Indian community. Nothing is wrong with that to me. They opened up businesses for each other. They shop with each other.
Right.
Now, when black people do it,
right,
it's some kind of militant uprising against some kind of supposed hierarchy that is supposed to have been good for us. You know, and I say this to a lot
right
of my white friends, but I want them to know that I'm saying this everywhere I go. I'm not your child. I don't need you to tell me how to act, to tell me what my culture and its blueprint should be. If you want to assist me, you can assist me, but you can no longer lead me. And that can't happen because we've already seen, if you look at it, we were freed some 300 years ago. We're literally, and I've said this before, we're in the exact same economic space, which means this paternalistic model of helping us help ourselves doesn't work. I need you to get out the way. You can be my favorite person. You can be my strongest investor. You can be my confidant. You can be all those things, but you can't be my leader. That won't work anymore.
Mm.
And this hierarchy of worth in our minds, it's another thing. You know, we're under the impression that a Jordan, because it's made by a Nike, a white company, Jordan is a great shoe. Actually, in a basketball sense, Jordan is one of the worst shoes ever made. But because they've invested into the idea that one black man with some phenomenal super basketball powers, and he's working for this company, that means it's a great shoe. What we don't realize
mm-hmm.
is they didn't sell us Jordans; they sold us Michael Jordan. So in essence, they
mm-hmm.
used our own image of ourselves to sell us a gym shoe. Now they make billions of dollars, and I'm not mad at Mike for making money. Don't get me wrong; this is not a knock on Mike. But we've got to understand that our culture is for sale. It's really for sale in every single form and fashion. The only people who aren't selling our culture is us.
Right.
Right.
Yeah,
and
Lonnie actually just went down to get some clothes on, what was that, Madison?
Madison, yeah. Yeah.
You know, selling our clothing, you know, hip hop influence and old school influence, you know, clothing. And
not
I swear I was going to walk in there and see a brother owner or a sister owner, and it wasn't. You know, and the issue with that is that they're not even wearing the clothes. It would even be better if the ones with appropriated culture actually participate in the culture themselves in a genuine way. But most oftentimes they don't. And that's in the music industry, and it's also on Madison Street, more local, you know, at these clothing stores. You know, they're wearing their stuff from their communities, but they're
right.
just selling our culture back to us, and sometimes at a premium. I mean, this stuff is kind of sick. If you really start to think about it, it'll make you kind of upset that we've fallen into this almost a habit, but in a lot of ways we're allowing
it's
this.
Not,
I guess
it's not a habit. It's a conditioning.
Not
and
a
we
habit.
Gotta,
yeah,
to,
and we're allowing
we
it though.
Mm-hmm.
Huh?
We're allowing it, you know, and we're allowing it
yeah,
by not
yeah,
seeing value. Right. Because, you know, another interesting thing, and I'm not generalizing at all, but this is just has been my experience when I go to different Middle Eastern shops, not all of them. But, you know, one thing in our community is we like to knock each other. So if we go to one of our establishments and it's not the best looking, you know, maybe it's not as modern and up to date, you know, we'll dog the place out. And again, I'm generalizing, but I've heard people do this in our community. They'll dog the place out saying, oh, you know, that place wasn't up to code or this, that, and the third, and this, that, and the third. But I've gone to a lot of Middle Eastern places that wasn't necessarily the most lavish spots, and they still supported that. And when they got enough money to be able to build it up, they did. And so we have to get out of that, too, is, you know, we have to support one another even at the ground floor. You know, and
mm-hmm.
we have to look for opportunities to support one another instead of looking for opportunities not to. And I see a lot of that. And it's some healing
mm-hmm.
that needs to happen in our community. And the only reason why I started the conversation off today with this kind of self-healing within our community is because I don't think help is on the way. You know, I've had so many conversations recently about trying to get these white folks and these other folks from outside our community to really understand these alternative ideas to the NAACP and non-profit models, alternative ideas to the scholarship model. Again, these are all good things to a certain extent, but just put your money somewhere else too. You know, you can do these things, these old models, but let's try some new models. And then they don't want to do it. And I don't know why. It's a mind-boggling to me. I have some inclinations on why, but I won't, you know, speak on all of them. But what I do know and what's important is I'm pretty sure at this point help is not on the way. And unless we can figure out how to do this for ourselves, we're in trouble.
You're being nice because I'm really tired of being nice.
I know. I am being nice.
I can't be
but
nice.
But I know you're not
going to
be nice, so this is a one-two punch.
I'm going to say it like this. You know, right now where I'm sitting on the 2000 block of Jackson where four people were shot. Matter of fact, I'm in the exact spot the car was in because I needed to come here because I needed to feel this again because this is home. And I'm looking at the bushes that the boys snuck through to shoot at the kids. I'm sitting here right now at this moment. And I needed to be here, and I wondered why I needed to be here. It's because, you know, once again, even this event we're doing later on, this is about the value of this community. Yes, something tragic happened here, but as I watch people go inside their houses and I watch little kids who are jumping rope and, you know, smiling, it just started to rain, so they're putting up their stuff and they're going back in the house. But it's their families. They're real people. And we've been pictured as this little violent little section of this town because – five knuckleheads in this town have caused some problems. But now the whole entire area is seen as X or the little violent stepchildren of Evanston, you know. And I know I'm a little bit local at times. I get really angry because we don't see our own value and worth. You know, we don't see the beauty in the experience of being an African-American under this type of pressure and surviving. We should love each other even more, but the exact opposite has happened where we feed off the pain of each other. And that is where the crux of the issue really is. We can't do that anymore. You know, I've done something to myself because I do it too. I've said that I will not denigrate or bring down another black person ever again. I don't care what they do. You know, one of the things I get in a lot of trouble for is because I tell people that they always try to kind of judge me by my past because my past has checkers in it. But see, the things that I did negative are not the total of me. You understand? They're like 10% of who I am. But because that little tag is on my toe, people are going to always question whether I'm a good guy or a bad guy. No, I'm a child of God. Now, I don't do religion, but I do God. And I'm a child of God. I'm as good as any man on this earth. And I stand as proud as any man on this earth, whatever you know blemishes I may have in my system. And so should all black people. And we also should appreciate that which we give each other. You know, that we are about each other, and we need to get away from that stuff. And once we get away from that, we'll understand that our culture is a blueprint on how you live life. We taught the world how to be merchants. We taught the world how to sell things to each other. That's where they learned it from. They didn't learn it from anyone else. They learned it from us.
Mm-mm.
Now, we can't even sell things to each other because after they take your culture, they bottle your culture, they show your culture on TV, in the magazines, everywhere. Now, all of a sudden, black people can't sell things to black people. The first merchant on earth. It's crazy.
Right.
It's madness.
When you say that, it makes me think about some of my friends and how we used to talk. And we would be like, you know how to bring pride to our communities and to talk to our kids. And we'd be like, we are descendants of kings and queens. And, you know, to make them feel a certain type of way. And then so we would be sitting around and be like, wait a minute. We're not, okay, we could have been kings and queens, but we are engineers and merchants. We are the people that invented everything. And my imagination is better than anything on earth. You understand when I was a child, there were no black people in advertising at all. I had to put myself in this ad and figure out how to make myself fit into this thing that they were selling. Do you understand that that is a skill? And that as kids and all people of color, you know what I'm saying? Black people, this is what we had to do to make it. And to think that you can, yes, you're a queen, all of that, but you have had to figure out how to fit yourself into this little tiny box that somebody else made for you. Do you understand that you are a pioneer? You're an engineer. You're a person of vision, and don't forget that. Like I don't know. This is how I try to talk to the kids. So
no, I love that you said that because I feel like they try to reduce us down to this community. The world tries to reduce black folks down to, especially in this country, to Just look at the movies they put out. So either we're the slaves or we're civil rights leaders. That's all they give us. Mm. You know, that's all we are. Mm. And so I love that you said that. You know, we are educators. We are engineers. We are inventors.
We are astrophysicists.
We are everything, you know. Yeah.
Right,
yeah,
we're everything. That's the crazy part.
Right.
We're everything.
Like, you know,
I want to share this story about my nephew. He's just my heart. But he's half black, he's half white, and he goes to school in New York, and they were studying black history, and his teacher, white, was talking about how, you know, Rosa Parks and how the black people had to ride in the back of the bus, whatever. So she said something insulting to him, and it confused him. So he came home to my sister and my brother-in-law, and he said, so the teacher said I would be on the back of the bus. Where would I be on the bus today? And my brother-in-law told him to go back to the school and tell her you're going to own the fucking bus. So I was like, yes, that is the answer. That is the answer. And we have to just really instill that in kids. We have to teach them the history, but we got to also instill in them, you are so powerful, you are so strong,
right.
you can own this land, you can own the bus company, you can own the store, you can own this, it's possible, you can do it. And I think in the schools today, I think they plant that seed in them that they devalue them. This is your history.
Yeah.
You're beneath.
Well, yeah, but see,
Lonnie, before I forget, let me say this about Dr. Ira Carruthers, because I believe she's an Evanstonian. Isn't she from Evanston originally, Lonnie?
Yeah.
She said something that I love. She said something that goes perfect with this. She basically was saying how, you know, slavery wasn't. I'm not saying it's verbatim, but she got across that slavery was not necessarily our history, but an interruption of our history. And even if that's not all the way to true, I love that mindset that, we were doing our thing, making history, and then it was an interruption of it. I love that. But what all they give us is the interruption as our history. And again, that's civil rights, that's the struggle. But they don't tell us that, no, actually, we were doing something before we were so rudely interrupted. And a lot of that is still going on today, both in Africa and around the world. So I just wanted to, first of all, shout out Dr. Ira Carruthers, because I love her. And also just give her put her wisdom out here, because that was wonderful.
I just wanted to jump in because I want to steer this a little bit differently. You know, I was told again by a very wise African-American person that, white people plan for 100 years, black people plan for Saturday night. And I never understood it when I was young. But, since I've grown up, I watched the Jewish community, who was pretty much persecuted themselves, probably not as much as we were. It's actually because of their own power in PR and media, they've made it seem that way, but it really isn't. But they have intensely and ruthlessly said to themselves that never again. And there's nothing wrong with that. The whole entire world accepts it. Never again. Mm-hmm. And when black people try to get into that intense movement, it's almost seemed, and I'm going to tell you what I really believe it is, it's that they feel that if we ever do grab power, that we will be as ruthless to the people who were as ruthless to us, which I doubt will ever happen because we're different types. Our culture is just different. I don't think black people will go for revenge. I think they may become violent because they're being pushed into a corner, but I don't think they'll go to revenge. And the reason I say that is because what happens is if you make a person consider themselves less than you for long enough, pretty soon they start to see your flaws. And the flaws in the Eurocentric systems are showing up all over the world. You know, you got global warming. You got plastic islands floating in the ocean. You got all kinds of things going wrong. And you got to remember something. African people ran the world for about, I don't know, maybe 40, 50,000 years before they ever run into a European. We did less damage in that time than they've done in 1200. Now, that's not to be critical of them, but it's also to show you the different type of culture. Their culture is about consumer and profit and all the things that really our cultures weren't about. But now since the game has changed, we got to get into the game. The game is about profit. The game is about land. The game is about water. The game is about resources. That's what it's become.
Mm-hmm.
And if African-American people are going to exist in this Eurocentric culture, we need land. We need water. We need assets. And we got to stop.
Resources.
And we've got to go after the resources just like they do. And there's nothing wrong with that. And just as viciously as they do. And you know, a lot of people consider me like this radical. I'm not radical. I don't want, you know, to destroy every Caucasian on the world, but I want my share. This isn't their world. This is not their world. And the idea that it's their world comes from them.
And any black person any person of color that closes their eyes and really thinks about what Lonnie just said as far as it not being their world, the first thing that came to my mind, if I'm being honest, is it feels like it, though.
Yeah, but
if I'm being honest, no. I want that to sink in, though, because I'm not saying that from a defeatist standpoint. I'm just being honest.
Right?
Yeah, that people have to realize that, damn, it's that deep that it's so much into your you know, subconsciousness that it feels that way. You know, it feels that.
But you realize when you look at people outside of your house, there are way more brown people than there are white people.
Right.
But they run everything. And if you think about it like that, you're like, wait a minute, how is this possible?
No, let's think about it a little bit. But this society
also puts brown against brown and tan against brown and
exactly.
tan against black.
But
so we, that too is happening.
Let's put this in context.
Right. I agree.
I want to put this in context. If the world was 100 people, right? Let's just say the whole entire world was 100 people. White people are 3 of those people. Mm-hmm.
Right.
Do you understand me? White people are 3 of those people, of that 100. That's what the real color denomination of the world is. So this idea, see, when you accept that it seems like their world, in essence, they've won the war. They've defeated you. This is not their world. This is not their world. And the resources and the things that they've done, and, you know, and I'm not here on tonight to bash white people because most of the white people have lived today. They benefited from things that were done a long time ago. But see, I'm also a realist. If you robbed my great-great-great-grandfather, you robbed me. And I don't have to feel sorry or any kind of way small when I tell you I need mine back. Do you understand? There's nothing wrong with that.
Right.
And African people need to stand up. And if we have to do it with our dollars, which I think is the only way to do it, then we need to get to business. We need to get business. We need to buy the houses that they're buying from us.
I have a question. It's a question, not a point of view, but it's a question. So, you know, we're always talking about if we came together, how powerful we would be because we do outnumber those that are in power. But I find it interesting that when we do come together and we want to organize something, some feel the need to bring in a non-African-American to open up doors to make the event or whatever the case reach more people, more successful, more something, more, because there's this idea that, well, if it's just us, it's not going to pop off, it's not going to be successful if it's just us.
Can Big Mouth answer that?
Because a lot of people do feel like you need to be inclusive. You need to bring in a non-African American when you're organizing something. You want to bring change because they have the key to
the power that be, or
to the resources that we don't have access to. The key
is that they have the ability to use their network, the network that we're not included in, which is exactly my point. If you put a white person inside of an event, they can touch more people. They can get in touch with the media. They can get in touch with the entities that will invest. There's nothing wrong with that. That's smart. That's actually smart business. That's how you should do business. The difference is that we as the people have to lead these charges. There's nothing wrong with white people that want to really be truly helpful to work along the side with black people. We'd be foolish to think there isn't, you know, because their network is larger and stronger. My problem is that because they're white, they walk in a room and they say, well, I need to lead this. No, you don't.
We just need your network. We need your understanding. We need your skill set. We don't need you to lead. We know what's going on in our community. We know what the issues are. Now, if you're really truly, there's two ways you can help people. You can help people as a partner or a parent. You understand? A partner, he's standing with you. He's listening to your ideas. He's giving you feedback on what you the angle that you should be correcting. A parent is someone who tells you what to do.
Right.
You know, listen, there's no, and this is for all my white friends. There are no white people that know more about blackness than me. There isn't. They don't exist on this earth.
Mm.
There's no white person who knows more about blackness than I do. And when you start talking about black people, I don't know the doggone thing about being in a white culture. I have no idea about it. I wasn't raised in it. But I know every second of my life, every heartbeat I've ever had was done inside of a black culture. If there's going to be an expert, it's me. It's not you. You can't tell me, well, I'm going to give you some nice worksheets, teach you that Susie is really cute, or even the books that they give you. You know, when I'm a kid, you get Spot and Jane. Spot and Jane are white. The dog's even black and white. You know what I mean? It was just the whole mindset was that their culture was all I ever saw. But that's not what I grew up in. And you can't doctor my community from afar. It just can't happen. And if you're a real partner and you really want to be a real person that's really trying to help, then you need to come into our community, find the people who have the skill sets, and help them get their ideas off the ground. Now, if you're really a liberal or a progressive white person, that's what you should do. You shouldn't come here talking about, well, this is what we should do. You don't know what we should do because you don't live here. And, you know, I want to use this as a moment to say about our event on the 27th. We involve some of the most open, honest, loving white people I've ever been around. I'm just going to be real honest with you. They listen. You understand? They're not trying to tell us what to do. They are assisting in the things we're doing. And to me, there's a beauty to that and a synergy to that that needs to be applauded. But, you know, the high uppers, the guys who sit on the benches with their little robes on and say, well, black people should do this. You know, I'm tired of them. Those are the people that Bobby's talking about when you go for years and years with nonprofits who don't solve the problem. They just continue the problem, so they keep getting funded. It's ridiculous.
And I don't think you'll know when it's really genuine, too, when people are willing to give you their resources and then get out the way and then trust you to do what you said you were going to do with those resources. That's when you know you're being treated like an adult.
I agree.
And I've been fortunate to run into people from outside our community who have done just that in my life. And that's when you know it's real. And it's almost, as a black person, it's almost shocking because you don't expect – you're so used to people outside the community not reacting and interacting with you in that way. Even a confident, you know, I feel I'm a confident person, but it throws you off because I realize, especially, you know, I'm going to be honest, growing up in this community, you don't feel that a lot. You really feel micromanaged. You really feel that paternalism in this community, unlike I think anywhere else I've ever been, and I'm going to be honest. And it's not that it doesn't come from maybe a helpful place and it doesn't come from a good place, but it's just so unhealthy for our community that I think that's why we've started this conversation and this dialogue on this radio show, but we're going to also extend this to the community. We already have, because no matter if it's good or bad, if the outcome is bad, we have to do something different. And I think that's the point we're at now. There absolutely can be allies outside the community, and you'll know as soon as it's a real genuine ally, and it's when it's real genuine help. As Lonnie said, it's quiet. It's more quiet than what we're used to, and it's more unseen than we're used to.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when you know folks are really, you know, they really want to help. And I also say this is that, and this is going back to our community. I think another thing I've seen us do even recently. You know, we had this breakfast. I won't name the folks that were in it. It was black men in this breakfast, and the whole time. And this is not the first conversation I've heard this, but the whole time we're talking about how the black community can't get something done. So they doing this, these people doing this, they doing this, or they don't want to do this, or they don't want to do this. And so at the end of the meeting, I was just listening, and I sat back, and at the end of the meeting, I realized that listen, it's 6 or 7 or 8 of us at this table. All of us are professionals. All of us have, you know, we can go in the bank and pull something out. And so essentially what we're describing is how we can't even do, you know, well, how we can't even pull ourselves together, the 8 of us sitting at this table. We think we're talking about somebody else. You know, we're thinking we're talking about the person across the street or the part, you know, our next door neighbor. Well, we're really talking about ourselves. Like, the 8 of us can't even figure this thing out. And that's, I think that immediately, and then, you know, we're going to, like I said, we're going to take this to the streets really soon. Again, I don't know when Lonnie wants to begin talking about that piece of it, as far as the movement we're hoping to put together with
all
the rest
of the
community.
All I can say is get ready when you see the word, the collective.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say. When you see the word, the collective,
peace
be ready.
Right. We're keeping it mysterious so people are interested in it. But I really believe that we have to start with ourselves, and even if that's 3 people, 4 people, 5 people, 6 people, let's start there. And let's be a symbol of what's possible, and let's be, you know, let's just start getting to work, because it's not, we're not going to get everybody to buy into these, you know, these alternative ideas. It's
You're
just
right.
not possible. And that never happens. That doesn't even always tell me.
No,
that doesn't even happen in the white community. White community does not all work together in peace and love. You know, there's competition and there's adversarial spirits even in that. Even in their community. But so we have to really start with just who's ever at the table and who's ever willing to give up resources. That's the people that need to be at the table. I don't think the discussion is over with. You know what I'm saying? Like, everybody wants to show up to the discussion, especially because, you know, they've also pushed this culture of, again, higher education, because you can monetize that. And that was another discussion I was having today. You know, why, when you're at the most kind of fragile and insecure and not sure, you know, what you're supposed to do in your life, you're trying to figure out your direction, does these debt, you know, these loans come down like a gift from God? And, you know, why does that happen? It's because school loan is one of the biggest, it's the worst debt you can get, because it doesn't go away no matter how many years go past. They can garnish your check. You know, there's this higher education culture that's been established, and so everybody wants to discuss. Everybody has an opinion. They want you to let you know their opinion. And that's why some of these courageous conversations that we have in Evanston, although they're fun and they're entertaining and they get the blood pressure up, and you can go home and tell your spouse, hey, I really feel like we got somewhere. Like, I think we're really close to giving up some resources now, but we just need to discuss it a little bit more. Like, that has to be over. Everybody at the table at this point, in my opinion, has to be willing to give some resources. Because that's the real sacrifice. If I'm willing to give my own resources, essentially what I'm doing is saying, you know, instead of maybe putting this into my son's college fund, I'm going to put this into community, because I love my community just as much as I love my son.
Right.
And
until
we're at
myself.
That point, exactly, as much as I love myself, it's just as I love my mother and my grandmother. And until we get to that point, we're not going to get anywhere. And
yeah, I want to go something in here, Bobby. I'm trying to stay away from the issues that created the problem, but I want to say something about the black elite. You know, I went to Church Street University. I got a PhD at Smoke Crack U. You understand? My education doesn't come from, it's not the formal education. But I will tell anyone on this earth, I am as smart and as witty and as able as any man or woman on this earth, and that certain things don't accredit your intelligence. And
right.
I say that because the black elite does something that's one of the worst things of all. When they get money, they stop hanging and being in their community. They stop.
Right.
They stop. You know, all of a sudden you got to move on Herschel or Judson. You know, you have to be near what you consider success. And in itself, that is a drain. And that's what financially bankrupts us, because we move out. We don't want to be around those that are really ours, who are really us. And, you know, like I said, I'm on Jackson right now. I don't care if I win the lottery tomorrow or I invent something. I'm not leaving. This is home. There's loud people next to me. There's people barbecuing in the rain around the corner. Some guy standing out by the car talking. That's who I am. This is home. This is home, and I'm not going anywhere. You know, I'm not going to leave, no matter what success I happen to have, because these black people are me. You know, these black people are who I am. And if I forget it because I become – No, because I become a little successful, then that's my weakness. You know, because you're only successful as the people around you. I need to bring up everyone here. If I can bring up anyone, you know, I had 300 kids a year, and I think all of them will tell you, for 17 years I had 300 kids, and I think all of them will tell you that Lonnie always tried to uplift us. And every black person needs to take that on as a, you know, as a model.
Hey, Lonnie, can you talk before we close about, you know, the relationship between Crestwood, and then you were talking earlier about that development in Des Plaines and Crestwood kind of housing area, and you know, juxtaposing that to what people saw when they first settled in this area, because I thought that was a really powerful.
You know, when African Americans first came here to Evanston, Illinois, they saw the water. The white people didn't even want to be down by the water because the lake smelled. So most of the African Americans built houses around the lake. As more and more Europeans move here, and you know, it gets to be a push for land and things, and Evanston becomes this community. The black people are literally shipped. They move the houses. They put the houses on trucks and drag them from sections of Evanston to other sections of Evanston to put them in the Marcy. The Fifth Ward is the Marcy area. And these people fought for years to build this thing up and create this wonderful 100-year-old African-American community. Around the 70s, real smack comes along. First, the prison pipeline, then crack and heroin. And the stabilization of this African-American community was, you know, broken. And now, if you want to find the descendants of the people who built this community, all you have to do is drive out to Des Plaines in Crestwood, which is really, in my estimation, a project. It's a project. And all these black families that were here in Evanston and strong and middle class and mobile and moving, are now, their kids are now in Crestwood, because we've dropped from 72% home ownership to 40% home ownership. See, once again, we're not paying attention. It's the resources. It's the resources, and we don't get down on the resources. We don't understand that these houses, these are our assets. We can't sell them. If somebody in the black African American community is sick on crack and they're messing up the house, somebody else in the African American community needs to step in. That's what white people do. You don't hear about it. They just step in. The house isn't lost to the culture. The business isn't lost to the culture. And our problem is that we're too busy. Lonnie used to get high. So did all of y'all.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? The difference is Lonnie will say it publicly. I was in the room with all of you. I was in the room with some of the aldermen. I was in the room with the ex-mayor of Evanston, Illinois. You understand? And this is not something I'm telling you. This is something I'm telling you the truth of. You know, people were just lost our minds some kind of way. You know, we constantly major in the minors, and we got to get out of that. And I think Crestwood has been lost.
I just want to describe it even more. Crestwood is also under, you know, what I would say is intense surveillance, because it's a stone throw away from, I think that's the sheriff's department or sheriff's, you know, sheriff headquarters.
Right, there, right around the corner.
And so we already know, unfortunately, black folks are criminalized. So that community is not only are they, again, they being pushed to these rental areas, the descendants of folks who built homes in the Fifth Ward, but because they're so close to this community, they're under extreme surveillance, which means they're you know, even worse than people in the Fifth Ward, that they're being kind of ushered into the prison system even easier because they're right there next to them.
Wow.
If you park in the wrong area after 9 p.m., and they let you know to a certain extent, but if you park in the wrong area,
they tow your car.
After 9 p.m., they tow your car. It's
$100 and something.
It's $175 the very next day. And obviously this is a working class, depressed, whatever we want to call it, community. So it's, some of these cars are being lost at these tow places. So this is, again, these are the descendants of folks that hustled and tried their hardest, you know, actually not try, they accomplished great things and built homes. And so because this is becoming a really pricey place to live, and you have to pay a premium to live in Evanston, and we haven't, again, successfully created the upward mobility that we need to work in this modern economy, this
it's
is what's happening.
About the
we're
water.
Forcing folks off. And 60%, from what we've calculated, 60% of the folks that live, the African-American people that live in Evanston, are at risk of being displaced, whether it's Crestwood or somewhere else, because they simply don't own enough to purchase a home. And that's the only way you can build roots in a community, is to own the property, to own the land. It's the only way. If you don't, you can be displaced. And at some point, we have to say, enough is enough. You know, I'm tired of seeing our communities pushed around. To a certain extent, that's happened to other communities. But certainly not like us, and certainly not, you know, as quickly as our communities are displaced. And you know, it's not healthy. You know, it's just not healthy. It's not healthy, especially for young people. We already know that young people need stability, and you got folks who are moving, you know, 3, 4, 5 times in 2 years or a year. You know, that's not healthy. That's not healthy for our young. It's not healthy for our culture. It's not healthy for our community.
It's not. I love this discussion. Again, we have run all the way out of time. Of course, you have to come back because these are discussions that we need to have. We need to mobilize. The time is now. It's not when. It's not if. Like we're saying, it's time for some action. Lonnie, I love that you always get real and tell the truth and shame the devil. We appreciate it all the time.
Because the universe knew the truth anyway, so me trying to fake it would not work.
Of course not. Right. Malika.
Only people that have secrets are people who think they have secrets. You don't have any secrets.
Right. You're right. And I love that you keep it real all the time. Bobby, you know, hey, man, you might be our resident go-to guest because we love it when you're here. Malika. It's always a blast every week. So I just have to slow pause the discussion. This is not stopping because we get like cut off in a little bit, right, Malika?
They
just turn us off. So we just like to end before they just turn it off on us. But as always, we thank our listeners for listening. One of these days we're going to take some more calls because we hope you're listening and participating in your own house. But here, you know, at the 30 plus show, we have these heated discussions. We you know, so much so that we can't even take any calls because they are just, this is what we're talking about, everybody. We need to have and people that are not listening in Evanston and other communities and stuff, we all need to mobilize. Like I always say, money brings options. Resources bring options. Owning property makes options for people. And that's what we're talking about. We're talking about the resources you can bring to the table to help not only your family, but other families that look like you. Black families, brown families.
Amen.
So that's what we're talking about.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
And it's nothing. And like you said, and you shouldn't feel bad about it.
Right.
And that's what the... And I don't know, these powers that be have somehow made you feel bad about being pro-black and buying black and all that type of thing. And it's like, I thought about that too. Like, I need to go somewhere and find some black, you know, black groceries or some black resources. And then it's like, should I be doing that? And you second guess yourself in your mind, but you shouldn't do that. Just do it. Find these resources.
That's a good slogan. Just do it.
Just do it. Support support your family. Support your community. And let's make it happen.
Yes, Brittany.
Malika's well, like, So, again, thank you so much for listening. Thank you, sir, our new guest. We love you.
Yes.
Bobo.
When we get off the radio, let's plan this night out so we can have some more Brittany questions and all of that.
Because
we want to get the non-PC stuff off the air. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
Yes, indeed.
We got to send a group text so we can get this going and pick this date.
Yes.
And then
I'll set it up.
Lonnie. For sure, Lonnie, as always, it's a pleasure.
And, you know, black women are the reason I'm still alive, so I always have a really good time talking to all of them.
Right? Malika, as always,
yes, ma'am.
It's been a blast. We're still celebrating Brittany Month. Any invitations? I'm open to it, people. It's Brittany Month until, well, the rest of the year. Let me stop playing. I'm not even kidding.
Okay.
So, thank you all for listening. We will see you next week, same time, same place. Be safe, everybody. This is 30 Plus. What the fuck, man?
That you feel me.